If you do the three things I tell you to do tonight, I guarantee you, whatever it is you want to do in life, you'll be able to do. You will be able to accomplish whatever you want to academically, financially, relationally, whatever. So three things. All right, now I'm going to tell you the story. I got to get out of here. And the story is about, you guys have probably heard about this before. It was a young man who, you know, he wanted to make a lot of money. And so he went to this guru, right? And he told the guru, you know, I want to be on the same level you are. And so the guru said, if you want to be on the same level I'm on, I'll meet you tomorrow at the beach at 4 a.m. He liked the beach. I said, I want to make money. I don't want to swim. Guru said, if you want to make money, I'll meet you tomorrow, 4 a.m. So the young man got there at 4 a.m. He all ready to rock and roll, got on the suit. He should have worn shorts. The old man grabs his hand, said, how bad do you want to be successful? He said, real bad. He said, walk on out in the water. So he walks out into the water. Watch this. When he walks out into the water, it goes waist deep. So he like, this guy crazy. Adrian, he like, I want to make money. He got me out here swimming. I didn't ask to be a lifeguard. I want to make money. He got me in. So he said, come out a little further. Walked out a little further. Then he had it right around this area, the shoulder area. So this old man crazy. He's making money, but he crazy. Said, come on out a little further. Came out a little further. It was right at his mouth. My man like, I'm about to go back in here. This guy out of his mind. So the old man said, I thought you said you wanted to be successful. He said, I do. He said, walk a little further. He came, dropped his head in, held him down, hold him down. My man getting scratching, holding him down. I got you. I know you brushed it out, but I got you. He had him held down. I need you for an illustration. He had him held down just before my man was about to pass out. He raised him up. He said, I got a question for you. Somebody answer the question for me. He said, when you were underwater, what did you want to do? Lip. I'm looking for a different word though than lip. What's that word? He said, I wanted to breathe. He told the guy, he said, when you want to succeed as bad as you want to breathe, then you'll be successful. I don't know how many of y'all got asthma in here today, but if you ever had an asthma attack before, you short of breath, SOB, shortness of breath, you wheezing. The only thing you trying to do is get some air. You don't care about no basketball game. You don't care what's on TV. You don't care about nobody calling you. You don't care about a party. The only thing you care about when you're trying to breathe is to get some fresh air. That's it. And when you get to the point where all you want to do is be successful as bad as you want to breathe, then you'll be successful. And I'm here to tell you, number one, that most of you say you want to be successful, but you don't want it bad. You just kind of want it. You don't want it badder than you want to party. You don't want it as much as you want to be cool. Most of you don't want success as much as you want to sleep. Some of you love sleep more than you love success. And I'm here to tell you today, if you're going to be successful, you've got to be willing to give up sleep. You got to be willing to work off for 3 hours of sleep, 2 hours. If you really want to be successful, some days you're going to have to stay up 3 days in a row. Because if you go to sleep, you might miss the opportunity to be successful. That's how bad you got to want it. You got to go days without, listen to me, you got to want to be successful so bad that you forget to eat. Beyonce said once she was on the set doing her thing, 3 days had gone by, she forgot she didn't eat. Because she was engaged. I'll never forget when 50 Cent was doing his movie, I did a little research on 50, and 50 said that when he wasn't doing the movie, he was doing the soundtrack. And they said, when do you sleep, 50? Sleep, he said, sleep. Sleep is for those people who are broke. I don't sleep.
What is the secret to human motivation? I often hear from a lot of people who ask me about my weight loss journey, I get the question on what was the magical thing? What was the thing that helped me lose all the weight? Was it a secret tea of some sort? If it was a special diet, special workout, a special exercise? Was it a special system? Was it a special program that I spent hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on? And the number one thing I tell people is the true key is drive. And the true key is motivation. You see, drive and motivation were the were things that kept me going on mornings where, quite frankly, I didn't want to get up to go to the gym. They were the things that made me show up when I didn't think I had the potential or the strength to. Today, I'm talking to my friend, Devin Seegers. Devin is a yoga instructor, a business consultant, a friend. Many years ago, Devin experienced a life-threatening, near-death snowboarding accident where he fractured his spine. And Devin could have let that injury easily demotivate him. He could have let that be the end of the motivation to his life. He could have let that lead him down a dark path. But what I'm really proud of Devin for, and what I think that you'll be proud of Devin for, is the fact that he took that as an opportunity. He took that as a blessing. He took that as a second chance. And today, Devin helps people work through the own blockages that get through their motivation. He helps businesses solve problems in ways that they might not have thought so before. I think you're really going to enjoy my conversation with Devin because we get really deep into what are the true keys to shifting your mindset and how to ask yourself the tough questions in order for you to find that motivation you need, in order for you to figure out what it is that your why is and what are the things that are going to help you along your fitness journey, your nutrition journey. What are the things that are going to help you get to the root of problems for yourself, for your friends, and for your family? I'm Rich Sabata, the founder and editor of BodegaBody.com, and this is the Bodega Body Podcast. So, joining me today is a very special friend of mine. He is a flow coach, a music producer, a yoga instructor, and quite frankly, an all-around really cool dude. I've known this guy for 7 or 8 years now, which is weird to say out loud how long ago our paths have crossed, but please welcome Devin Seegers. Welcome, Devin. How you doing, man? How you feeling?
Wow, thank you for that introduction. Great for the connect, man. It's always good to chat.
Yeah, man. When I thought about starting the podcast, and we caught up recently about 2 months ago or so, and I was thinking about all around great people who can, I think, have a great story to share with folks and who I think people can learn a lot from. And I immediately thought of you. Because I think the story that you shared with me and the work that you do every day is really truly inspiring. And so I think off the rip, I want to talk about your journey into where you got today. I know that a while ago you faced a pretty serious spinal injury when you were snowboarding. So I think I want to kind of start there and talk about how that...
We're starting in New Jersey.
Yeah, we're starting in New Jersey.
Really? All right.
how that incident happened and how that's influenced Sure. where you are.
Sure. Okay, cool. Yeah, cool place to start. And thank you for helping me, God, because it's just my life.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what's interesting or relevant, but yeah, whatever is most fruitful to you or your audience, I'm willing to go there. So, when was this? Probably 2012-ish. Wow, that was a while ago.
Yeah.
yeah, I got invited down to Mountain Creek with some friends, and I'm a big snowboarder. I've been snowboarding since I was like probably 12 or, you know, kicking in yeah. those plastic snowboards on the back of friends' hills. And it definitely escalated, and it was just something that stuck. It was fun. It was intrinsically rewarding. It was, yeah, it's awesome. I love watching it. And I don't even love watching many sports.
was it a thing yeah. where you did it every winter?
Oh, as much as I could. Okay. I was completely hooked, addicted. And it was also the way that I bonded with friends. Yeah. It was our hangout spot. So I grew up about 15 minutes away from a mountain hill. it's definitely not a mountain, but...
we're on the East Coast, so there, yeah, there's fun. Only so was, much.
Yeah, yeah, the ice coast. Yeah, yeah. So anyways, fast forward a little bit. I've been snowboarding for a while, and there was just this one morning that we went down to Mountain Creek. They have an all right park. I used to ride a lot of park, loved rails, and did stuff that I would look at now and go, that's insane. But I guess that just means I'm kind of old. Yeah, whatever the case may be. I hit a C-rail. I just had a little bit too much speed. C-rail, for anyone who does not snowboard or knows that, is just kind of like in a shape of a C. And the middle part of the C is banked. So that's the highest part of the rail. So you can, theoretically, if all goes well, you hop on the rail from, let's say this one was on my right side, and you hop on from the left, grind around, and at the top, you kind of use that to push down and you exit smoothly.
Yeah,
I had a little bit too much speed and shot off the middle at the higher point. And next thing you know, I was, 20 feet below the rail, and everything was kind of white, and I didn't really know what was going on. And it was just one of those experiences. I'm sure you've gotten the wind knocked out of you before.
Of course.
And you're like, oh, I just want to breathe. And it's really dissociative, and you don't like, I definitely didn't think, oh, I broke my back. Mm. I was just like, I knocked the wind out of me.
Right.
Ow. I rode down, and there's this interesting little penguin waddle that happens when you get to a flat section and you have a board strapped to your feet that skiers may not know about or make fun of snowboarders for. But yeah, you just kind of flex on either side and boing yourself along. This is strange to describe. And I did that once, and my back was just like, no.
Wow.
No, something's wrong.
Yeah.
So that was my day of riding. And where did that go? I was living in Vermont with a really good friend that winter break, and we were excited to ride all the time at Stratton and Okemo and all the beautiful places. And for me at the moment, it was just like, oh, come on, this sucks.
Right.
Really? Like, I'm finally in Vermont. I'm finally riding all the time. I get to hang out with my best friend and ride. And this sucks. This really sucks.
So,
and yeah.
So one of the things that pops into my mind is, I know there's a very clear physical toll that happens with an injury like that, but what do you think, how are you feeling emotionally? Because you're doing the thing you love, and a thing that you probably try to do as much as you can. And this thing that you love has, you suffered an accident and it caused you all of this great pain. Tell me about what was going through your mind at this time when you're trying to jumble all these things in your head together and you're trying to make sense of it all.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Yeah. I think it popped my little bubble of naivete.
Yeah.
What is that word? You know what I'm going for. Come on, help me out here, man.
It's naivety. Yeah, that's a word.
That's a word I don't use very much. But my childhood, I'm invincible mentality.
And how old are you at the time?
I was like, oh no, you can be hurt. 22 maybe.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man.
But there was still just like, I am invincible. What, like, come on, bring it.
Right.
And like I said, I would do things. I would not hop on a rail over a staircase right now on a kinked rail. Like, I would not hit one of those US Open jumps now. But I used to do that stuff because there was just this fearlessness and it was fun and there's an adrenaline rush and your friends are doing it and you get better and there's a progressive learning curve. But it wasn't really anything other than, okay, this is humbling.
Right.
And I had this awareness of, wow, I'm really glad that I fell and this happened 5 feet from the ground. Cause I just landed. Imagine standing on your kitchen table or something and then just like maybe giving a little hop and dropping right down onto your butt.
Ow.
So it was a compression fracture.
Yeah.
But I was just really, really glad that I didn't do the same thing on a, 60 foot gap.
Right.
Cause you're, that's the equivalent of jumping out of, at least the first floor.
Yeah. At least.
So I honestly felt really lucky, as strange as that sounds.
Of course.
Cause I was like, wow, I'm in a sport that you can kill yourself with.
Yeah.
And people do every year. Thank you for only bashing me up a little bit on this rail.
No, look, man, I think it definitely puts things into perspective, and I think in a couple of ways makes you realize how short life is, and how like how precious those little differences between, you know, the size of your fall would make, and, you know, to the microseconds and how you turn when you're falling and how you land, and all of those things, I think, add up to this moment where you realize, like, okay, I'm here. I'm in pain. This sucks, but I'm alive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And so there's that mix of like, okay, this is not normal. There's a new norm.
Yeah.
And I can't do all of the things that I love to do for a little while. It was the first time in my life that I had to stop. Like, I had to slow down. And then I still found myself like with a little back brace going back to school, and then on the side of like a mountain and just hiking, and I was like, yeah, I can do this. I'm like, Devin, stop. You can't be doing this stuff. You need to chill. So that was a big change for me. And, I think we talked a little bit about what it led to, and it definitely led to an interesting path in my life. We talked a lot about yoga and all of that stuff that I never thought I would be into. In my first yoga class, I was like, oh, this, I keep saying this, but this sucks. This is slow. This is boring. Like, why would anyone want to do this? And that was my first experience with it as a little kid.
Let's peel some of that back, right? Like,
wherever you'd like to go, man. So I'm an open book.
The physical toll, obviously, of that process was immense. So you started yoga as a part of your recovery, right? And how did you first get into it? How did you first start hearing about yoga in terms of being restorative and trying to get you some sense of what it feels to be normal?
Thank you. I wish I remembered a little bit better. And I also wish I had better coping mechanisms at first, because honestly, what I did was we smoked a lot of weed. And it was just like, that was kind of the break. And I realized this is not a sustainable solution. That wasn't even that fun. Right. Just like coughing now. So I don't really know. It had always been, there had always been some sort of presence in my life with yoga. My dad, when he was younger, got into yoga and never made it a big thing. It was just kind of a Sunday morning thing. Like, if I woke up early, I would see my dad stretching with a cup of coffee with his little yoga book beside him.
Right.
And how did I actually find my way in? I don't know. I think we all kind of know it's something good for you, but it's so easy not to do. Like honestly, so much respect for what you're doing and what your message is and what your mission is, and bringing health and better lifestyle choices to people that may not have that. And it's again, like, we all know it's good to do. We all know that eating vegetables and what, not the bag of potato chips is good to do, but it's easy not to do, right? So I don't know what it was that actually got me to go to start going to classes and start going consistently, but I do remember the next like snapshot was going to my local YMCA and just being in this room, and I'm the only dude, I'm the only one under 50, and I'm just like, just don't leave, just don't leave. Like, that was my mantra. That was just don't leave, just don't leave. And I'm looking around me at all these.
To show up.
Well, it wasn't even that. It was like, don't leave. Because all I wanted to do was be like, yeah, I probably have to go get a drink now. Like, I probably have to go to the bathroom now. And all of these women are around me, gray haired, like beautiful, graceful, strong. And I'm like, wow, they're all kicking my butt. So that was kind of the next snapshot of just like, wow, this is way harder than it looks. This is not some woo-woo bullshit. This is hard.
I'll tell you, the first yoga class that I went to, I was definitely a lot heavier than I am now. And I remember sitting in there, and there were all these smaller, skinnier people in there. And some of the things that they were doing with their bodies, some of the contortions, some of the way that they were holding themselves up, I was absolutely dumbfounded. And some of these things, like the stronger version of me now, still can't do. And I work towards doing them as often as I can practice. But I'll tell you that when you take your first yoga class and you take your first couple, you start to realize, no, there's a skill here, and that execution of strength is awfully relaxing and it is awfully head clearing. And I would have never have anticipated that because where I come from in the South Bronx, no one's talking about yoga. No, you know, that's like a thing that you see people do in movies. And that's like the hoity-toity thing that people who drink green smoothies do. But you never anticipate it to be this really life-altering thing. And I think probably the best part about yoga is that it's probably one of the most accessible forms of exercises that exist.
Yeah, have a body, you can do it.
Because the only thing...
you don't even need a mat.
Yeah. So...
I love what you said. Yeah, if I could just revisit something that you said and underline that.
Go for
it. This, the physical exertion and the mind-clearing capacity of it. We are such immensely powerful beings. And I feel like when we self-domesticate, when we just allow ourselves to be like, look at what happens to a wild animal when they're in the zoo for too long. Like even if I look over at my dog, like right now she's just laying there sleeping. She's like, sure. But if I let her off the leash, like I did this morning in the park, in the woods, and she goes wild and it's like, wow, that's living. Yeah. And I feel like if we don't push ourselves, if we don't do something like it, you know, it doesn't have to be yoga. Yoga has a little bit more of a focus on the breath, but even I know you're big into lifting, right?
Yeah.
After a lifting session, you just go, wow, I had all this energy that I needed to blow off and I needed to push against something. I needed to use my strength.
Well, I'll tell you that, like, for me, lifting is therapy.
Yeah.
Like it's how I make sure I can get up for work the next day. It's how I make sure that I can get through whatever is, you know, stressing me out. And I think that, you know, there's something incredibly animalistic that exists in all of us that I think as we get older and we definitely lose because you let kids run loose and they will run around. They'll play around. They'll jump around.
What happens? Yeah. And then you see these people driving by in their cars with, it looks like it would break their face if they smiled. And they're so like wound up, their shoulders are up to their ears. And you're like, wow, what happened from a little kid that was playing and running around freely to that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely. really like this weird self-domestication, which I've never said before, but I just like the idea of like, you just stop listening to your inspiration. You stop listening to your intuition.
Right.
You stop.
And there's so many of us, to the call. Part of that domestication is like we plop ourselves in front of our computer screens. We plop ourselves in front of a TV screen. We plop ourselves in our cars and we just sit to go everywhere. And we put our bodies in these like incredibly unnatural positions.
Yeah.
And we spend so much time in them. Like I sit in this chair that I'm sitting in right now. This is the chair I sit in to do my work. And I sit in here 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then when I get up, when I get up to go do whatever, I'm just like, oh my God, like what is my body is telling me, dude, you got to stop. You got to do something a little bit more natural.
Yeah, man. Have you ever tried a standing desk or like, hey, you don't need to blow $400 on a desk that goes up. Like, have you ever tried an egg crate or like not an egg crate, a milk crate? Or just like something to stack your computer up.
I've tried them a couple times with mixed results. So I think I need either the right setup or the right environment. Cause I think part of my thing is that I get distracted incredibly easily. So I haven't tried the standing desk.
Oh yeah.
I haven't tried the standing desk since we've been working remote, but I might have to give that another try.
It's a game changer. And like I said, you don't need a standing desk. You need something to prop up your computer a foot. And then you need to actually stand.
No, yeah, exactly, man. That's actually the egg crate thing is a really good idea. Cause it's simple, but I wouldn't have thought of it.
Yeah, I mean, anything that's like about a foot. I mean, even stack your books. If there's a will, there's a way, right?
Yeah. So how did you go from going to a couple of yoga classes, wanting to just stay there and not give yourself an excuse to leave? And how did you get to the point where you're like, no, I want to share this with other people. And I want to teach other people that this is going to be beneficial.
I had to experience it for myself. I went through it and I realized, wow, the beginning is tough, but wow, it's worth it. It's really worth it. And it was just a thing It definitely did not start that way. I had no intentions of becoming a yoga instructor. But over the years of just staying consistent, and when I say consistent, it was consistent as a beginner that was not very consistent.
Right.
If that's very confusing, but I was, it was a part of my life, but it was not like a daily thing. And as I kept going, it was just like, wow, I feel way better the days that I do this. It's just that simple. It's just that simple. And then when I was in Asia, I was living in Thailand for like 6 months, and I was working there as well. And I had about $1,000 at the end of it.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, you know, I could bring this back to, you know, like I had earned in Thai baht, what would be the equivalent of a US $1,000. And I was like, okay, I can go bring this back to the US, and you know how fast $1,000 goes here.
Right.
Or, wow, I can take that and go get trained in India. Awesome. Let's go to India. So that was my way to become an instructor. And part of it was, yeah, I would love to share this with other people. And the other part was just like, hey, India has always been portrayed as this really magical place. Some really influential people in my life have just told me their experiences with India. So I wanted to go to India, number one. And then I just wanted to learn from the source.
Right.
And also just improve my own practice. So it started with just learning myself. And then you get to a point where you go, this is really cool. I want to share this with someone.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we share it in that same regard, where I spent so much time trying to teach myself things and trying to learn this health and fitness and nutrition thing. And then once I learned how easy it was, I'm like, I need to tell other people about this because it's not that hard. But I think there's this,
right.
And there's this mental block, right? And I think you started alluding to it a little bit when you talked about consistency. Mm. What's your mindset around what it means to be consistent, what it means to work at something in order to get through that mental block, to climb that proverbial mountain that everyone has to get through with whatever it is that they're doing, whether that be physical fitness or a goal in their life?
And that's my path right now. That's my work.
Yeah.
Everything I'm doing is to access that next level of commitment, concentration, consistency. And the thing is, it's consistent consistency. It's really showing up. And the only thing I was consistent with for much of my life was being inconsistent. And even with yoga practice, where if you look at other things, I definitely have a shiny object syndrome and like to bounce around, and I'm naturally curious. And I think that's a common thing, but really honing in and being consistent is incredible. And until you have one objective, until you have like one goal and mission where you see the fruit of actually being consistent and you go, wow, this is worth it. It's hard to sell someone on being consistent. Like, yeah, you just show up every day. That's not sexy. That's not very compelling.
No,
and you have to have one thing where you show up consistently enough to get to a point where you're competent, where you're skilled and it turns fun maybe you've created something and you're like, oh, I see the value in being consistent.
There is, I think this, and I think gym people are probably really, really guilty about this, where people, you know, go to you for advice and they say, you know, what's your secret? What's your magic? What is it that helped you get to where you are? And the number one thing that I always tell people is there's bumps in the road, and there are going to be things that are going to set you back or that are going to get in your way. And there's always going to be an excuse for something, an excuse not to do something, an excuse to do things the easy way, do things the way that you're used to doing them. But I think you have to think about what it means to you inside and why it is that you do the things that you do. And what are the things that you truly want? And I think that once you're able to identify those things, something like consistency becomes so much less intimidating.
Absolutely. When you know why you're doing it, it makes much more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think no matter, you know, what a person's physical goals are, whether that may be to become more flexible, whether that be to walk normally after a spinal injury, it's figuring out what's driving you on the inside.
Absolutely. 100%.
So tell me a little bit about the work that you do with folks. How do you see your role now that you are an instructor, a teacher, a guide,
sure,
a coach?
Sure, yeah.
How do you work with them?
The first thing that comes to mind is just questions. Questions are your greatest tool, your greatest ally. And it's just a mindset of being curious and seeking to understand. And I think if you like it's always different and you have to meet whoever it is where they're at. Hmm. Otherwise it doesn't work. So I have to understand where someone is at, whether it's snowboarding or whether it's in business or whether it's in the studio or whether you fill in the blank, but you have to understand just like where that person is at. And then once you get really clear, like, hey, this is what's going on and here's what you want to do. What's that little piece of resistance in the middle?
Right.
And usually if you ask enough questions, that just falls away because you go, oh, that was right. Silly.
Yeah, of course.
So questions. Yeah. Questions are incredibly powerful. Like, I don't know. I'm looking over at my bookshelf and Tim Ferriss is a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
And has really changed the course of my life. And I think I realized the power of questions from listening and reading his work and seeing that questions are such a powerful, powerful tool. And the questions that we ask others are going to determine our relationships. And the questions that we ask ourselves are going to determine possibly our most important relationships, yeah, like with ourselves. And so it all comes back to questions.
Yeah.
And if you can really listen, what is someone saying? I mean, that's just as important or more.
And I think what you're saying is really applicable to a lot of things, right? Like it's applicable to someone's everyday life and regular conversation with their loved ones or their business partners. It's applicable to all sort of levels of problem solving and goal accomplishing. It's what kind of questions are you asking? And how you ask those questions in order to get one, you as the helper, the coach, the problem solver to get them through that mental hump, but for also to them to start thinking about for themselves, what are some of the things that are holding them back from accomplishing that goal?
Absolutely. There are a lot of people that, I don't, coach is a weird term and it's thrown around a lot. Like a lot of four letter words. That's not four letters, is it?
It's all right.
Anyways, bad joke. I completely lost my train of thought. Oh yeah. If I just tell you something, it's not going to be nearly as powerful or impactful or actually stick with you and let like versus you coming to the same conclusion yourself. Yeah. So if I can guide you to a conclusion, if I can guide you to an insight, it's way more profound than me just spewing, you should do this.
Right.
And I think there's a difference between a coach and an instructor or a teacher. Mm. Like I'm not a lecturer. I find it incredibly hard to go just stand and speak. Yeah. But if I know what I'm speaking to and I understand where someone's at, then the right information comes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. I've been thinking about for myself, the different kinds of mental blocks that exists and whatever goals, especially over the last three, almost 4 months since COVID-19 has, you know, caused us all to pause and take a minute. I have found that it is a lot harder, at least in my mind, to do some of the things that I enjoy. One, because gyms are closed, I'm not going to be able to go work out.
Sure, sure.
But two, all of the things that I've been doing to try to keep myself in some semblance of shape, whether that be jumping around my living room or going out for a run. I'm like, this isn't the thing I like. And it's really hard to do this. And I've been trying for myself to figure out what my why is again. When my medium for release has been flipped upside down.
Right.
And it's no longer familiar for me.
Yeah. And that's something that a lot of people are facing. And this big question that I'll share with you that has been reoccurring in my own life and has been really powerful is just, how can I love this? Mm. Like, can I love it all? And I'm just becoming more and more aware of the things that I'm resisting. And when I catch myself on the verge of maybe complaining, I'm like, whoa, check yourself. Like, what are you doing complaining? Like, oh, you hate this? Really? Your life's pretty good. Like, do you know how many other people have challenges way worse than you? And you're like, oh, you know, I don't love that I can't go to my gym anymore, or whatever the example might be. Like, oh, this is slightly inconvenient.
Right. No, exactly.
But can I love it anyways? Can I love it anyways? And that's my mission right now. I'm doing things that I definitely would not naturally be called to, and I haven't been for much of my life. But in the past 5-6 months, I've started a business, and I've had to do a lot of things that are not in my wheelhouse, or not in my strengths, and it's just taking a moment and going, all right, I'm doing this because I see the value in it, right? You see the value in exercising. You understand that going for a run is going to make you feel better long term. But how can I love this? How can I make this fun? And maybe it's something like, hey, I don't really like running on streets, so I'll drive to a trailhead.
Right.
That makes running fun for me. Maybe it's something like, how can I reward myself? When I started going to the gym, my friend Mike got me hooked on these chocolate smoothies, and they were really good. And that was the reward for going to the gym. So it's little things of negotiating with yourself.
Oh yeah.
Of going, how can I like this? Yeah.
No, that's good.
How can I love this? How can I love this? Yeah.
I like that, because what's interesting is that I think for a lot of people who, I'm talking about weight loss in particular, but when they're going on their weight loss journey, they're like, okay, I'm going to toughen through this salad, but at the end of this week, I get that one cheat meal, and my one cheat meal is going to be totally worth it. Because I fought for it all week long, and eventually you learn to like that salad, and you start adding things to that salad that make the process better. But there's this, the negotiation with yourself. I really like the way you word that you say, no, this is going to be worth it. And I want the end result from this.
Yeah. You can't be a tyrant with yourself. Mm. Like, you have to, a big thing, it's actually funny. It's on a post-it in my mirror right now, and it's practice self-leadership and practice self-discipline. And to be a good leader, I think a great way to look at it is just, how do you train a dog? Positive reinforcement works. Yeah. Praise works. When you're doing the right thing, it works. If I smack my dog, which I won't do, like, she'll be scared and she won't want to listen. And that's what she's just going to remember, is that I'm an ass.
Right.
And I, like, I, you know, I was definitely an ass to myself for many years.
Right.
And I'm starting to hear that that's a very common trend.
It's a common
but
thing.
How do you treat yourself
people.
Like someone that you'd actually want to lead? Yeah.
No, it's so funny that you mentioned that, because I think, not to get too philosophical about certain things, but like,
please do.
I think about like parenthood often, because the way you just mentioned your dog. And I think that you think of like super tough parents that like just want to like bring the hammer down on their kids, and they feel like that's the way to get to it. And maybe they don't enjoy that process, right? Like, maybe they don't enjoy scolding their kids. Maybe they don't enjoy.
More importantly, that's probably just what they're were shown.
Yeah.
That's probably what they were taught.
Yeah. And what I've seen a lot is that, like, especially, you know, like parents who introduce like spanking, into, their parenting practice, that doesn't always get the results that parent wants. And it, it doesn't necessarily deter the negative behavior. So if you apply that kind of thing to yourself, punishing yourself, being mean to yourself, being hard on yourself, isn't going to get you to get to that ultimate goal that you truly want.
So
no, I don't think so.
That's just what I've found in myself. So the more that I can encourage myself, the more that I can empower myself, the more that whatever it takes, if it's going to be journaling about what I'm grateful for, or writing down my wins every night, or I don't know, looking in the mirror and saying, yeah, the whole universe is conspiring in my favor.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, all the weird, quirky little things that we do. It all comes back to love wins. Hmm. Right? It's like, yes, it's so simple, but you come back to going, is this a loving way of operating in the world?
There is.
As cheesy as that sounds.
No. It's good. And I think it's something that people need to hear, because people hear like self-love and like eat, pray, love all the time.
Yeah, but also self-love is having discipline. Yeah. And going like, no, get up, you lazy fat piece of shit, go for a run. And I'm not talking to you, I'm talking like, no. And that's also not a good way to talk to yourself. Right. So let me rewind that. But I definitely have that mental talk sometimes. Self-love is also tough love, and it's being truthful, and it's being honest and having integrity and going, okay, well, you know, suck it up. Even though you don't want to do this, you need to take care of this part of your life.
Yeah.
It's responsibility.
Yeah, no, it's why people show up to work. It's why people, you know, show up to parent every day. It's why people mm-hmm. show up to whatever it is. It's that inner responsibility that you realize that like, no, this thing is going to contribute in the best way possible to my life. So
yeah. And you can tell the difference with the people that show up and choose to try to at least love what they do. Of course, it's not going to be all the time, but other than the ones that are resentful, have you ever heard of Khalil Gibran,
the Prophet? I have not, no.
Great book. The one thing that stood out to me from that entire book was there was this line that goes, work is love made visible. Work is love made visible. And that was a really interesting and at the time profound insight. And it went on to talk about if you're doing something like if the baker is baking bread with resentment or dread, like that's what it becomes. And that's what you're giving someone. So it again goes back to, can I do this all with love? Like, how can I love this? And yeah, there are a lot of things in work and business and life that you don't necessarily want to do, but you go, okay, like, can I do this in a loving way?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of the work that you do now is surrounded around helping people.
What other kind of work is there, man?
That's a really interesting question. I was going to go somewhere, but I don't know. Because I guess if you boil down everything, you're helping someone else do something, right? Like whether you're working at a chicken factory or you're a business consultant. So if you boil down all work, mm-hmm. you are, I guess to a degree, helping someone do something else, right? Like,
absolutely. You're adding, like, there's no business out there that doesn't add value. Actually, there are a lot of businesses out there that don't add enough value. And that's why, like, more than 96% of businesses fail in the first 5 to 10 years. But yeah, that's what it's all about. Like, what are you doing for work if you're not helping someone?
Sure.
If you're not improving their life in some way, if you're not adding value, then you don't have a business. You don't have a job. You don't, what are you doing here? And you also don't have a purpose. So if you can find that way, that right there is actually something to touch on. In any job that you do, like, dude, I've had so many jobs and so many that were probably not great. Mm. Definitely not great.
You've all been there.
But you realize, okay, like my mental questioning is, how am I helping someone with this? And if I'm serving someone food, like I'm going to show up and go, hey, this couple came out to not have to wash the dishes tonight. This couple came out to have a lovely experience with their partner and not worry. And if I can come in there and provide that experience and make them laugh and go home and they go like, thank you, Devin, at the end of the night. Just as an example, like I've definitely waited my fair share of tables, then it makes the whole night so much better than the person that comes in and goes, another fucking shift. Right. I can't wait for my shift drink. And I mean, hey, it's your choice. You can do either. But my night went a lot more fun and went a lot faster. And and I made other people's lives
better. It's so interesting that you mentioned that, because I think one of the things I've heard, and not to toot my own horn, but I'm going to toot my own horn for a second. But one of the things I've always heard in my career, in my day job, is, Rich, no matter what you do, no matter what position you've had, you might not enjoy what you'd be doing, but you have a smile while you're doing it. And I've always appreciated that about you.
Yeah.
Because it helps me do my job better. It
helps everyone. Yeah. That attitude goes so long. And that attitude in a business, in a team setting, is so crucial. And if you don't have that, I mean, if you look at the stats from, I know you said something about business consultants before, but there's a consulting agency or a consulting group called the McKinsey Group. And they came out with these stats about like how many people are actually engaged at work. And then they had this weird phrase that was actively disengaged. So people that are going to work and like consciously kind of sabotaging their work and workplace. And numbers are scary high. There are a lot of places where that attitude, your attitude of just showing up and going, this kind of sucks, but I'm going to smile and I'm going to make it fun. Like whatever it takes, maybe turn on some music or make some jokes with my coworkers and go back to work, whatever it is. But that's so important, so valuable. Happy people are more productive.
And I think like yoga, a positive attitude is universal. And the way you show up with love, with confidence, with positivity, that is universal. And I think that it's something that we can all do no matter what it is that we do out there, from waiting to running a business. It's something that I think, especially in the universe today, with everything going on in the world, all the chaos that's happening, all the lack of balance that's out there, that's something that we can all do a little bit more.
Absolutely. And I think what's interesting going on right now is a lot of people that maybe had that way of serving, of improving people's lives. Like, I think that's why we're all here. Like, that's when you feel, I'm not going to say you, that's when I feel most aligned and I feel like I'm on living on purpose. And there's a level of fulfillment when you feel that you're contributing and you're helping other people. And a lot of that just got ripped out from people with the coronavirus. So yeah, we have to find new ways to connect, new ways to create that dynamic and help other people. And this is really, I think, another call to creativity. And it's just like, all right, cool. Yeah. Everything that you were used to, everything that was comfortable, nah, not anymore.
That's true.
So what do you want to create?
I ask myself that every single day.
Good. Yeah. That right there. That's the money.
Yeah.
And I wish I was told that when I was like so young, like all throughout high school, all throughout my entire life. Just like, what do you want to create? This is all your creation and you get to choose. You can be a conscious creator.
Right. That's incredible.
Have you ever heard of Dan Millman? He wrote this book called, again, it could be like a really cheesy title, but it's The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And I think Dan Millman is an incredibly wise and inspiring man. He was a gymnast and became like very good and a coach and became injured and went on to becoming more of like a spiritual teacher. But he has this movie, and in this movie, it's kind of him as a young college athlete, kind of cocky. And he ends up getting into a motorcycle accident. And he has this dynamic where he goes to this gas station and he meets this guy that is very wise and is like this magical old man. And there's a point where the guy that is Dan as a young man goes, you know, like, screw you, Socrates. And he called him Socrates because he was so wise. And he was like, you know, like, all you do is run a gas station. And there was this moment and he goes, this is a service station and there is no higher calling than to serve.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, maybe you're pumping gas and you can go to that job and go, I'm getting paid minimum wage. This sucks. Or you can go, this is a service station. I'm here to serve. How can I serve to the best of my abilities? And that changes everything, right?
Changes every single ounce of perspective that you have. That's incredible.
Yeah, so it's powerful. Just like you waking up every day and going, what do I want to create? What do I want to create?
I guess let me ask you, how is it that you are serving and how is it that you're creating?
Man, that is a question I ask myself often. And to go back to like, hey, being an ass to yourself, I've beat myself up so many times for not having a good answer to that, for not having a clear answer to that and not being okay with just going, hey, that's my intention and I'm figuring that out. At the moment is the question for like, at the moment, what am I doing?
Yeah.
At the moment, I've dedicated myself to understanding business and really learning how a business functions, how a business gets business, how a business retains business. And I realized that, which goes back to marketing, which you are in as well. And I realized there's so much squeaminess around, if that's even a word, around marketing and just feeling like it's sleazy and feeling like it's unethical. And yeah, those people are out there. And I also realized that I just had this idea the other day because I was kind of battling with myself going like, what the fuck are you doing, Devin? Like, this is not your gift. This is not your calling. This is not your thing. And whatever, it's how I choose to look at it. But back in the day, if you made pottery or grew food or wove something, you had to just bring it to the market. Otherwise, no one knows about what you do and you can't add value. So marketing is not inherently bad. It's just bringing what you do and the good that you have that you're able to serve to the market.
Right.
And I realized that without that skill, I was not in a place that was financially fun at all. And even doing things that I would say were fun and purposeful, like, hey, I just, one of my clients just finished up an album. It got back from mastering. She's getting ready to release it. She just released a book. Like, that feels incredible. But being unable to really pay for stuff or your lifestyle is not fun in the same way. So there's a way of like, I need to merge art and commerce,
of course,
and figure out the skills to support your passion. So that's the path that I'm on right now. And how am I serving? Like, I just basically like saved someone's business, which was really cool. I had my first happy client, man. And he called me and was like, hey, like my crew doesn't have any work. And I worked out a system for him and made it happen. So yeah, I mean, there are always different ways to serve. And right now it's interesting that it's in marketing and solutions in that way. But again, it's all the perspective that you bring to it. And I could just say like, oh, I'm putting on ads, I'm running Facebook, I'm like doing automation. I don't know. That's all just a tool. But what I saw was someone with a great intent. I mean, he does blow in insulation. What? But when I got to know the guy, yeah. Like that's where I was too. And I actually on the first call, I kind of disqualified him. And I was like, you know, I don't really work with this industry. Like that's not my wheelhouse. And I got to know him a little bit better. And I saw that he was just a great guy with great intentions and oh, cool. Wait, this service can actually cut your bill in like 30 to 50% and make your house way more efficient and save energy and make the world a little greener. Like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So how am I serving now? Like, that's what I'm doing right now, which is something that I would never have thought I would say, because it's so different than what I've done much of my life. But I really did see the utility of just going, I need to master business.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting to me, and look, I'm not a religious guy at all, but what I will say is that I think that everything happens for a reason, right? And the lessons that you learned previously in your life help your current situation, no matter what it is. So I think all of your experiences and all the things that you've been through, getting to the root of questions and getting to the root of problems and learning that self-balance for yourself is a way for, at least in the moment, for you to help someone get through whatever business mental block that is. And maybe you're not talking about the philosophical stuff every day with your business clients, but I think you're asking the right questions to get them the answers to whatever problem that they may be facing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And all of the personal blocks are what show up in business.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Well, yeah. Businesses are just made of people, right? And they're people that,
you know, exchange money. Remember. Yeah. Yeah. That person on tech support is a person. Treat them like a person. Yeah. Oh my God. I heard this wonderful thing a little while back of just, it's, I don't know why I brought up tech support, but when you call them, just before you even dial, have the intention of going like, this person is going to serve me so well that, and we're going to have such a wonderful interaction at the end of this call. I'm going to ask for their manager and ask if I can give a recommend, like, or just say how wonderful you were, and go into the call with that kind of mindset. And it's again, just like framing and perspective, but there are so many times that you can want to call something like tech support. No one wants to call tech support or go to the DMV. No.
Right.
Right. But if you go into it with that mindset, yeah, it's going to suck.
But no, it's important to, definitely important to keep in mind. Well, Devin, how can people interact with you, worked with you, find you online, have their paths cross yours?
MyName.com or DevinZegers@gmail.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. Dude, this was absolutely incredible. Thank you for chatting with me, for sharing this hour together, and for, I think your story and your perspective, again, definitely helpful to people out there. And I think we could all, one, learn from each other, but definitely learn from you.
Thank you. Yeah. And I hope we all go into that perspective that we can all learn from each other. Yeah. And like everyone seriously has something to learn from. And thank you, because coming into this, I was like, oh, what am I going to say? Like, why does he even want to interview me? I'm not even that interesting. I'm like, what am I going to say? And there's part of it, it's just is like, okay, I have to trust myself that the words. So thank you for inviting me. Thank you for the work that you do and just creating more health and fitness in this world and vitality. And it's really a beautiful thing. So I wish you nothing but success.
Awesome. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bodega Body Podcast. My name, of course, as you already know, is Rich Sabata. Give me a follow on Instagram and Twitter. That's at Rich Sabata, Rich C-E-B-A-D-A, or at Bodega Body on both Instagram and Twitter. And of course, for more content from me, some of the things I write, some tips and tricks on how to get started on your personal fitness journey, please check out bodegabody.com. Take care, everyone.